John, there's been nobody quite like the Dodgers this offseason in doing business, and we'll get to talk about it with their general manager, Brandon Gomes.
It should be great. Should be fascinating. I'm glad that you were able to get him for the show. I know we've been trying for a Dodger, and wow, the two biggest signings, Ohtani and Yamamoto. We've got to see what went into that, how they feel about it. I'm really looking forward to this week.
Well, John, up till now, they had lived up to that nickname Dodger. They had been dodging us, but now we got Brandon Gomes. We'll talk to him,
Nice.
obviously, about everything. You're welcome, John. We'll talk to him about everything. You and I will talk about Marcus Stroman. You and I will talk about our three favorite each moves so far this offseason. And of course, we'll play Hit and Error at the end if you stick with us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
John, since we last met, the Yankees did get a starting pitcher, not the one they wanted, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, but I'm not even sure one they thought would be a consideration even a month ago, certainly 2 months ago or 3 months ago. Marcus Stroman has spent some internet war, social media war with the general manager, Brian Cashman, since they didn't acquire him in 2019.
Right.
He certainly has not endeared himself to lots of folks on social media, in person, teams, etc. But I guess beggars can't be choosers. He was looking for a place to go. And the Yankees, and look, on the mound for about 130 innings a year, Marcus Stroman is a very good starting pitcher. Yankees decided they'll, you know, somebody will have dinner with him and decide he's a new man and that everything's going to be great. And so the Yankees have decided he's a new man and everything's going to be great. And so, John, what do you think about the Yankee marriage to Marcus Stroman? It feels like a forced marriage, shotgun marriage.
Yeah, I don't know that anybody's a new man at age 30 or whatever he is, but they like the deal, obviously. 2 years, $37 million. I mean, I saw people complaining about the deal. Like, how did he get this little? Well, people were shocked when he opted out of the 1 year and $21 million, so they shouldn't think that he should get much more than 2 years and $37 million. I thought the deal was fine for who he is, for what happened last year, for the time that he missed. You know, he's obviously a solid pitcher. He's going to provide innings. I mean, you know, 130 innings wasn't a full season last year, but it's more innings than most guys give you at this point, right? I mean, unfortunately, there's an injury epidemic in baseball, and by comparison, relatively, he looks very, very healthy over the long term. He's got a lifetime ERA under four. It's usually under four most years. So, you know, they need pitching. They need pitching depth. I still think they need more guys, but they certainly did help themselves. I didn't like the fact that it seemed like it was either or between him and Snell. I don't get that. You know, I mean, Snell's going to be many times more money than that. You know, are they saving and it's $37 million? Do they have enough depth? I don't see it. I still think they need to do work. If they don't want to spend the money on Snell, I get it. There's a big gap there. Go for Ryu, Lorenzen, somebody, because they give up four viable starters to San Diego, plus lost Severino and Montas. They need pitching.
You know, on the subject of, like, say, Montas, just to give an idea what Stroman's perception was in the industry, Montas got traded into a race in 2022 with the Yankees and could hardly have pitched worse for eight starts. He pitched in one game in late September last year, and he got $16 million. Marcus Stroman, who was an all-star last year, got $18.5 million for 2 years. You know, the people who are asking you the question, like, why didn't he get more? Like, the fact that this is what the industry, at a time where they're begging, right? Tyler Molly had Tommy John surgery, got two at $22 million. He's not going to pitch before probably August, right? Okay. You know, Severino got $13 million off of almost a 7 ERA last year. You know, people are desperate for starting pitching, and yet they weren't desperate for Marcus Stroman. Now, will that lead to Stroman looking into the depth of his soul and saying, why did this happen to me when I'm still relatively just at the end of my prime? And if I was kind of not an off-field problem, I'd probably be looking at like a 5-year, $100 million contract. I don't know. You know, the Yankees are not dealing with great actors. They just, you know, they got out of, it feels a little bit to me like they all whined about like, oh, I can't believe Alex Rodriguez's 10-year contract. Then they waived him. And the second that contract was done, they traded for Giancarlo Stanton. Like as if like we learned our lesson. No, we didn't. They just got out of Josh Donaldson. And now they're into Stroman. At the same time, they're into Verdugo. At the same time, they're into Carlos Rodon. It feels to me like the Yankees have said, we think that we still have some veteran championship Jorge Posada, Derek Jeter clubhouse that could absorb all this. I want you to know, once CeCe Sabathia and Brett Gardner walked out that door, I'm not sure they can.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a question. That was a big question with Stroman, and that's why people were surprised he opted out of the one for 21. And then, you know, he got a 2-year 37, which to me, I thought that was about what he was going to get. So I'm not surprised by that. But the fact that Toronto, the Cubs, the Mets didn't want him back, that should be the thing that really tells him something. You know, he worked for those places. They know him best. You know, he may claim that they did or whatever, but from what I understand is they did not want him back. So, you know, the field was somewhat limited because he pitched for three teams, so it was limited to 27. But there certainly was there is a need for pitching all around. I mean, he talked to Baltimore, Boston, Angels, Giants. You know, I don't know that any of those teams eliminated him because of the fact that he's a tough personality. So, you know, the need for pitching is great. I don't like the fact that the Yankees are taking the route that's saving them money and getting a character question. I'd rather the Yankees, who have the highest revenue in baseball, go for the best player. You know, I think somebody brought up to me that, you know, their payroll should be a lot more because it was $200 million. You know, 15 years ago, now it's $300 million. Well, the revenues are up from 500 to 900, allegedly. I don't know. They don't show their books. Obviously, the Braves are the only one who show their books, and they're making money like crazy. But, you know, I understand the tax is high. We don't like to pay tax, so I'm sure Al doesn't like to pay tax. But I don't like that the decisions are made based on the finances. You know, go for the best players if you're the New York Yankees.
Yeah, the last thing I want to do is exonerate the Yankees and Hal Steinbrenner here, John. But they did offer $300 million to Yamamoto, who was the pitcher they wanted. The fact that they haven't kind of gotten close to what Snell wants at this point, like that would suggest to me they don't love Snell. And they do have a right to have like a taste test here and decide who they want and who they don't want and at what prices. I can't accuse them of like cheaping out when they were willing to go to the top.
Cheap's
of the
a little strong.
To the top.
Yeah,
of
I'm
the
not going
to.
So I'm not going to say they're cheap. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
but
I'm not going to say they're cheap.
But they're allowed to like the fact that we're willing to spend $300 on Yamamoto. If they really love Snell, they just sign him. We know they have the money. They were willing to spend it. I think it's a reflection on Snell. I think they actually, if you told them they can have Cease or Snell, I think they'd rather have Cease. I just think that they don't want to give up three prospects for it. John, I would just say that I think the problem is I would have punted on all these pitchers. If you remember where I was at the beginning of this market, which was if you're doing Soto, you better make sure you're getting Yamamoto because you're going to hate all the other pitchers besides Yamamoto. And that's the situation they ended up in. So I think they've just held their nose here and said, we didn't love the rest of this market. What's the like guy we can like think is still a good pitcher that doesn't cost us a ton in either prospects or money, and they've ended up with Stroman. John, I'm with you. It's not a great outcome, but I think
would
that's
would you
really
love that? I mean, is that would that be the decision that you'd
I
make?
I wouldn't bring Blake Snell to New York, John. I wouldn't.
With Snell, too. But what about Stroman?
No, that's the problem. That's what I'm saying, John, is I didn't like the marketplace. You know,
right.
There are certain people I wouldn't want on my team, certainly wouldn't want on my team in New York. These guys fall into those categories. You know how I felt about Rodon last year. I felt that they shouldn't bring him to New York. But you got to live in the world of possible. And that's why I didn't love the idea that they were kind of like they had to know they were getting both. I mean, they'll obviously be better with Soto. They'll have a shot at the playoffs. But I mean, I don't love how the team looks right now.
Yeah, well, you know what? I don't blame them for drawing the line on Yamamoto. I mean, he is a guy who's thrown a lot. I know he's only 25, but he's thrown a lot of innings. Obviously, it's great better to have a guy who's 25 who's thrown a lot of innings than a guy who's 31 who's thrown fewer innings. I get that. But I don't mind them drawing the line at $300 million. He is a 5'10" right-hander. I do think he will be the top of the rotation pitcher. But look, LA has invested now $380 million in him, counting that posting fee. That's a lot of money to invest, right? I mean, if you could get Snell for half of that, would that not seem like a decent deal?
I'm not paying half of it. If it's a car I don't like, I'm not going to buy it because it's half the price of the car I want.
What is it about Snell you don't like? If it's the innings, if you look at the innings, they're better than what Rodon was. They're better than what certainly Glasnow, which is to me, I know that he's a top of the rotation starter when healthy, but I mean, if the innings are the big deal, how does Glasnow end up with $27 million? I'm not sure.
I don't like it. Look, John, it's across the board. It's like,
what's a bargain? Like, is there a bargain out there?
Yeah, here's the thing is, you are really ahead of the field on this. Is like, I don't think it mattered where the Yankees went with Yamamoto.
I don't think
the
so
Dodgers
either, right?
Went to 325. You were before anyone saying West Coast. And so, like, I think the Yankees had to stop because it didn't matter. I think the Yankees could have gone to 330, 340. Once the Dodgers matched the Mets, it was game over. John, we talked about this. Let's real quickly go through. We've had not as many signings as we'd hoped to this point. Spring training's, 4 or 5 weeks away. Why don't we kind of each picked out, haven't told each other, three signings we like to this point. Let's bounce back and forth. Start with one you like.
Well, I'll take the most obvious one. I mean, Ohtani, $700 million. That's not really $700 million. It's either $460 million or $432 million. If you believe in Mark Walter and Guggenheim, and I certainly do, it's even less than that. I mean, obviously, it's the biggest contract in history, but he's the best player that we've seen come along. Unique, a marketing coup. He's probably worth at least $20 million a year just in marketing, probably more than that in terms of everything. So, I mean, the Giants were willing to do that deal. The Blue Jays were willing to do that deal. I don't think the Angels were. I don't know whether they were spooked by all the deferred, although the deferred's supposed to benefit the team, not the player. And I'm not sure on the Cubs. They've never really said they're like a vault. We don't know what the heck they're doing. But, I got to go with Ohtani as my first pick. Or is that my third? I don't know. That's the first pick I'm giving you.
I knew my gut was you'd go with Ohtani, and I agree with everything you just said. It's a great sign because at the end of the day, it might end up being cost neutral or actually a benefit to the Dodgers by the time we're all said and done, especially what it does to bring in other players from Japan, other business from Japan. I'm going to go with Aaron Nola at 7 at 172. You know, at the beginning of the market, it felt like a lot of money, right? But the Phillies, I think one of the things, we have Dave Dombrowski and Alex Anthopoulos, people who are willing to be aggressive in the market for what they wanted. And it's funny because Alex Anthopoulos wanted Aaron Nola. And if the Phillies had shown any weakness, I think the Braves would have jumped in there in the NL East and tried to get him in a stronger way. Instead, Nola wanted to play there. And the Phillies know two things about Nola that's worth kind of stretching a little. These big cities are not easy for everyone to play in. They know Nola can handle it. And they know Nola can handle the postseason. And he seems like a hard worker. He seems like a good teammate. They were willing to pay the price. Is it a year too much? Maybe. But 7 at 172 now, looking at the rest of this marketplace, feels like a good deal for the Phillies to reunite with someone they feel so comfortable and confident in.
Yeah, the Phillies are great at free agency with Harper and Wheeler, the most obvious examples, but right down the line, Castellanos, Schwarber, they've done very well. This is their own guy. You're right. He's big in big games. He's good in the big market. So I like that one as well. My second pick would be the Diamondbacks. I'm going to give them two here because, they got to the World Series. Nobody expected it. They didn't rest on their laurels. They bring in Eduardo Rodriguez for $80 million. I like that move. They got Lourdes Gurriel back, and they're still talking about hitters, whether it be Turner or Hoskins or J.D. Martinez or Soler. I guess those are the four hitters out there. I mean, they look like an improved team, and I give them credit.
And they traded for Eugenio Suarez to play third base. You
Right,
know, he
very
strikes
good.
out a lot, but lots of home runs and a very good third baseman. I do like their offseason as well. John, I'm going to pick one, maybe a little off the beaten path. I'm going to take Tyler Molly for two at $22 million. I actually think he's a really, really solid number three guy. He had Tommy John surgery last May. I find it interesting what the Rangers are doing in Molly, Scherzer, and DeGrom. They might kind of acquire three starting pitchers as the season is going along. The question is, do they, you know, it's Eovaldi, Gray, Dunning, Heaney, and Cody Bradford right now. Do they believe in that group could hold on for a month, 2 months, 3 months, or are they going to end up with Jordan Montgomery before this is all said and done, bounce Bradford back to the bullpen, and then kind of work in the other guys? It would be interesting, but I like the Molly thing. I think he's a good, assuming he comes back well from Tommy John surgery, I believe that's a good number three starter at two at $22 million. Again, looking at what starting pitching are getting in this market.
Yeah, I like Molly. That doesn't look like a bargain to me, but I do like Molly, so I'll half agree with you on that one. Texas is very good at free agency, like Philly. If they resolve that TV issue, I think they will be the ones to sign Montgomery, though he's got a big market. People seem to like him for the durability and the improvement, the trending factor. My last,
Postseason also, right?
yeah,
Montgomery
right.
proved he could handle a big game.
Absolutely, very good in the 2-0 with a 1.29 ERA against the rival Astros. That's pretty good. My last pick, not really a signing. I'm going to take the flip side of the Soto trade. Obviously, we like that from the Yankee standpoint to combine Soto with Judge. Fantastic, but you know, I know that AJ Preller was not satisfied with that deal, even though he got basically what he asked for, and the Yankees basically said okay to it in the end. He had told somebody, "I got killed on this deal." I mean, we see the price of pitching, and you end up with Michael King, who's at least a mid-rotation starter, assuming health. You've got Thorpe, who's got great potential, Brito and Vasquez, who looked pretty good in their starts with the Yankees last year. You got four pretty good starters for 1 year of a guy who's getting paid $31 million. I like that move. So I'm sticking the NL West. Those are my three picks. I know I cheated there because that's really not exciting, but
No, where you're good, John. No cheating. And I'll just say this. You know what we would call Michael King if he was still a Yankee, even with Stroman? The number two starter,
number two,
right?
right?
Like, that's the number two
Absolutely.
starter for the Yankees with all they did in temperament and stuff. We don't know if he has the durability to go out there to make 20, 25, 30 starts. We're going to find out about that this year. And Johnny Brito, if nothing else, for the last 6 weeks of the season, did a good Michael King imitation out of the bullpen as a multi-inning guy. My last one, I'm really going to go off the beaten path for this one, John. So I'm going to do Shelby Miller for 1 year at $3.25 million. He has an option year for 25. He was injured some last year, but for the innings he pitched, he was really good. Down the stretch, he came back. He didn't give up a run in his last 10 outings. And you know what? The Tigers, they also signed Andrew Chafin. They're bringing back Miguel Diaz, Will Vest, Tyler Holt, Jason Foley, Alan Lang, all guys, Alex Lang, all guys who pitched well last year. At a time where the Twins are doing nothing, the Guardians are doing nothing, the Royals are coming from too far back, the White Sox are breaking down. I wonder if the Tigers have built a bullpen when you start talking about guys now like Torkelson and Green in their lineup and Casey Mize coming back off of Tommy John surgery. Are the Tigers going to win the AL Central? I like Shelby Miller
Yeah, they might.
because they had a decent bullpen and they made it stronger with Chafin and Shelby Miller.
They might. Scott Harris, a Northwestern guy, I might add, just doing a
You
good
just
job there.
happen to work
I
that
always
in there.
do. I always do. I think they're doing a good job, and I think they believe that they can win that division, and I don't doubt it. They certainly can.
Yeah, well, if no one else is going to try except for them and the Royals, and they started ahead of the Royals, they might pass those teams. One team we definitely know that's trying, you like that segue, John, is the
Not
Los
bad.
Angeles Dodgers. They invested over $1 billion this offseason. We'll talk about all of it with their general manager, Brandon Gomes, if you stick with us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman.
I'm Alex Rodriguez,
and I'm Jason Kelly
from Bloomberg. This is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
John and I are so happy that Brandon Gomes, the general manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers, the very, very busy Los Angeles Dodgers this offseason, they've invested more than $1 billion long term, and they've made two huge signings, obviously, Shohei Ohtani and Yoshinobu Yamamoto. You'll fix me on the pronunciation as I go along, Brandon. And they traded for Tyler Glasnow, re-signed Jason Hayward, signed Teoscar Hernandez. I just wonder, as a way to start, Brandon, it feels like you've checked boxes maybe at the top of your level. How close does this look like? Is there literally a meeting at the beginning of the offseason where you say, what are our targets? And you put a plan A up on the board, maybe. How close is this to plan A?
A lot of it is, you know, mapping out different paths that we can go down, because we have no idea how free agency and trade talks are going to end up. And it's, you know, kind of bucketing each free agent, each trade target, and trying to understand how it all fits both short term and long term. And, you know, with Shohei, we felt like that was probably the first domino to fall. And whether we got him or not, then that would send us down different paths. And fortunately enough, we were able to, you know, come to a deal and bring him on board for you know, long term, which we couldn't be more excited about. And then, like, at that point, it was kind of going down different paths to make sure we were addressing team needs and making sure that we were both prepared for this season and the future without, you know, without taking on too much downside.
Besides being the best player in baseball, Ohtani is a pretty good secret keeper, and we really didn't know where he was going. There was some murky thought out there that, well, he liked Southern California, so maybe the Angels and Dodgers may have an advantage. Obviously, as this went along, there were rumors that the Jays were making a big play, and he was very, very interested. How did you guys feel about it going into it? While it was going on, did you start to worry when those rumors started to come out? And, I mean, when he finally decided to say, you know what, we're going to do a deal with the Dodgers, what was the reaction?
Yeah, we didn't know. You know, we felt like we were in as good of a position as anyone, but there was no definitive, like, hey, we feel great. You know, the day before the decision was a roller coaster for us, like it was for many. And, you know, understanding that it was important for Shohei to announce it himself, you know, everything leading up to that point was just, you know, there was a lot of unknown. So, you know, getting that call a few minutes before he posted it on Instagram was certainly exciting, and, you know, a lot of hard work from a big group of people paying off.
Brandon, obviously he's going to be part of your lineup this year, which was as good a lineup as there was in baseball last year. You scored over 900 runs. He joins Betts and Freeman, most obviously. But I'm assuming part of $700 million, even heavily deferred, is about him being a pitcher again at some point. How confident are you that he's going to be a starting pitcher for you as early as 2025, and why?
Watching him and talking to him about his thought process, how he goes about his rehab, how meticulous he is in everything he does, you know, we couldn't be more confident in betting on the human and how he takes care of himself. And, you know, all of those things lead into how does your rehab go, which is very important on, you know, how effective you are when you come back. And, you know, Shohei is a physical specimen and takes an incredible amount of pride in how he goes about his rehab, and very calculated in each and every step. So we feel really good about how he's progressing. The person, the reports from our medical group and, you know, Dr. Eletrosh, that Shohei will come back and be pitching at a high level.
Yeah, I want to ask you about the deal. It's a record deal. We know that. Is it a $700 million deal, a $460 million deal, a $432 million deal? And it did seem like the 97% deferral was kind of his idea. I know you guys do deferrals, but usually not 97%. How did that come down, and how do you view the deal?
Yeah, it was something that was presented by, you know, Shohei and his group. And, you know, as we were looking at it, it checked a lot of boxes for them. It allowed us to, you know, which was really important to him, to continue to add talent and not be, you know, bound by a very high number. You know, it's not insignificant with how it hits our payroll, but you know, it certainly allowed flexibility to go out and continue to add and put the best team out there possible, which was obviously something we're always trying to do, and couldn't have been more evident through our talks with Shohei that winning was, you know, first and foremost for him.
Brendan, you had an uncomfortable afternoon at the winter meetings, if I remember. Forgive me, I'm sure I was part of that uncomfortableness when Dave Roberts talked more openly than I think anyone else during the negotiation with Ohtani. I just wonder now, in retrospect, do you think, did that unsettle you guys, and did it threaten you guys signing this player at all?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I think it was, you know, a small hiccup in the whole thing. And I think ultimately, you know, being able to bring Shohei on board, he understood what we were all about and how great of a group we have and our coaching staff and Dave and how genuine he is throughout the whole process. So I think, you know, while we weren't sure how it was going to ultimately play out, it turned out to be like the other things were far more important for Shohei. And, you know, we, couldn't be happier to have him on board.
Yeah, I'll just put in my two cents on that. We love Dave Roberts on the show. He was our first guest and one of our best guests, and I'm glad that it didn't affect the deal. And I wouldn't think it would, but who knows these days. And now to Yamamoto, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. You know, the Dodgers, to me, have gotten so many deals that look like bargains, even on great players. Freeman, signing, I think it was 6 years, $162 million. Betts, that was heavily deferred, so the $365 million really is closer to $292 million. Yamamoto deal is a lot of money for a guy who's never pitched a game in the big leagues. Now, other teams were willing to do it or at least get close. What did you guys see in him that you think this is a good deal?
Yeah, you know, all the work that our scouting group has done, watching on video, personally having a chance to watch him throw in Japan in June, you know, the stuff is electric and high end. The command is, and I've mentioned this before, the command is something that you just don't see all that often anymore. And it's those two combining that makes us feel really good about him, his ability to navigate big league lineups. And he's going to have multiple weapons to get guys out. On nights that he doesn't have one of his pitches, he's going to be able to command other pitches to, you know, to get outs effectively. So like that, you know, the stuff and command is one component that is incredibly high end. And then later on, how much he cares about his body, his routine, being as dialed as possible for every start. It's something where it's like, okay, this is somebody you want to bet on long term. And, you know, he, like Shohei, wanted to win and felt like this was a great place for him, and that the support staff that we have and the resources we can provide was, you know, they were all a good fit for what he was looking for. So I think those things of like on-field stuff and command with off-field makeup and really wanting to be on a team that wins was, you know, the perfect marriage for him. And like, we couldn't be more excited about, you know, him going to be being in our rotation this year.
Brendan, I have something, two parts, because I think they're connected together. The first is, will you have to go to a six-man rotation to break Yamamoto in, you know, who's used to pitching on, I guess, once a week, like most Japanese starters because of their schedule and the way they do things? Which leads into the other question is, you obviously have guys with high-end stuff, right? But Yamamoto hasn't pitched here. Euler didn't pitch last season. Glasnow pitched a career-high 120 innings last year. And Miller and Sheehan were rookies, so this will be kind of like their first full season in the major leagues. So I'm just wondering, six starters and just how you piece it together to get enough. You have the stuff from these guys to get through the season starting pitching-wise, innings-wise.
Yeah, you know, for how we're constructing our staff, we're looking at it, talking with Mark and Doc and working through different scenarios. I think it'll be important to put Yamamoto in the best position possible to succeed. And we just have different options on how to make that work. And we've talked to him all along about it. Like, he's, you know, itching to get on, you know, a regular schedule, more accustomed to how they do it you know, in the big leagues. And our thought is like, hey, we're going to continue to have conversations and make sure that you are coming out of each start feeling good. And we don't need to set anything in stone and trying to maintain a big picture on how to onboard him into a major league rotation. And, you know, as far as Glass, like, we feel like, you know, his work ethic, makeup last year as a really good foundation to use as a jumping off point is much more of like what he'll be able to do, because all of those injuries have either been kind of freak things or relating back to the elbow. So our bet is that, you know, this guy's going to, he's built, he cares, he's dialed in his routine, that he's going to be able to log innings. And then, you know, kind of the same thing for Bobby. Bobby has had a good foundation of innings over the last few years between the minor leagues and the big leagues, that we're going to take care of our guys like we always do, but we're not concerned about overloading them. And we're fortunate enough to have a deep pitching staff at the upper levels that as the needs come about, we feel really confident that there's quite a few guys that are eager to step in and show that they belong in the big leagues. So it's something that's going to be fluid, because we never know how things shake out in a rotation. And I don't think that's unique for us, certainly, but we do feel good about, you know, the quality and the quantity of guys that we have available.
I was going to ask you about Glass now, but you gave a great explanation there for that acquisition. So Yamamoto, same thing as kind of I asked you on Ohtani. There were rumors that he liked the idea of the West Coast, but you never know how that pans out. Obviously, you know, you paid him a good salary. So, I mean, you didn't know for sure, I'm sure. But I want to ask you, I mean, the Yankees felt confident. Other teams felt good about it. How did you feel before he said yes?
Yeah, same thing. We didn't know. We knew he was looking. He was excited to be in a bigger market and wanted a team that was going to win. And, you know, these other factors were going to play into it. So, you know, we were fortunate enough that, you know, we seemingly checked a lot of the boxes that he was prioritizing. And I can't argue with him that SoCal's not a great place to play. So we were excited about it, and, you know, how we'll be able to onboard him and have him part of a really talented group is something that fit for both of us.
Do you think, I think specifically with Ohtani, but of course you got to include Yamamoto, one of the most decorated pitchers in the history of Japan. Do you think you've opened a pathway to Japan to make it easier for you in the future? And I'm thinking specifically about Roki Sasaki, who's already being associated with your team and is now maybe like considered the best pitcher left in Japan after certain other guys have left. Do you think Ohtani made it easier for Yamamoto? Do you think Ohtani and Yamamoto make it easier for you to continue to have a real footprint there?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say that it's directionally helpful, and how much I don't really know, because I think for each player, when they become a free agent, they have their own priorities and desires on what they want it to look like ultimately. So, you know, I think there's certainly a benefit to like a younger generation, where my assumption is that a lot of younger kids playing baseball in Japan are going to see a lot of Dodgers games and be wearing Dodger hats. That's our hope. So that could help, you know, down the road. But in the immediate future, I'm not really sure. I think it's unlikely to hurt, but I don't know exactly how big of a benefit there would be.
When you got Ohtani, I wrote that it was great for baseball, but he's on the Dodgers, one of the traditionally marquee franchises. I got some pushback, a lot of pushback from Toronto. I mean, it does feel like you have a super team. Is there any guilt associated with that? Your team looks so good on paper. And would it be a disappointment if you don't win at least 110 games at this point?
I mean, every year for us, our expectation is to win the World Series. And if we don't win, we're crestfallen, right? We're disappointed. Our fans are disappointed. It hurts for a long time. So I don't really see any difference from this year to last year or the year before. Each year, we're trying to put out as talented of a team as possible. And yes, we've had a splashy offseason, but I think we all know from watching the game like, it doesn't guarantee anything. So we are putting out the best possible team we can this year and in the future. And hopefully that brings championships. That's our goal. And we just live in a sport where that doesn't necessarily guarantee us anything. But we do feel like it's a talented team. And now we just have to go perform out on the field.
Brandon, there's been nobody like your team the last 11 years. You've made the playoffs every one of those years. You've won 10 division titles. The year you didn't, a team had to win 107 games to your 106 for you not to make the playoffs. The thing that's been missing is championships. You have the one in 2020. Does the way stuff-wise you built this rotation, is that trying to address not just 162, but October? Do you feel like you could impact October when you're building a roster? Or do you still have to just say, hey, we have to build the roster for 162 and take as many shots in October as possible?
I think it's a bit circular. Look, I think there's been teams in the recent past that you wouldn't say have traditional aces that have gone to the World Series and won, like multiple high-end starters. I think it's all about, do you have guys that you feel like can get you through 162 and then the team that's going to go out and perform at a high level in that playoff format? And we feel like that's certainly been our goal over the years. And this year, we feel like it's a good blend of like very high talent in the rotation and the in the lineup. And it's a balanced lineup. So, you know, it's about going out and in those moments, are guys playing the way they're capable of? And look, last year we did it. So I think our guys are really hungry and excited to get out there and get back at it.
You know, your team is spectacular at this point, but you, by my calculations, and my calculation is basically looking at Kotz or Sportico, you don't have the highest payroll in baseball. You're still second, at least according to them. Is there still more work to be done? You guys have been associated with Josh Hader, who I've been a big advocate of, not just for your team, but for any team, as the best closer in the game. You obviously have Phillips, who's terrific, but I was wondering if you still have more room in your payroll and if closer is something that you might be looking at. Kenley Jansen rumored to be available as well. But
yeah, I think it's like very much about being opportunistic right now. Feel really good about our team in all aspects. And if there is, you know, the opportunity to go ahead and do something that we feel like makes sense in the short and long term, we'll do it. And if not, we feel good about how our team is constructed if we started spring training tomorrow.
You know, at the winter meetings, I run into 10 or 15 kids who ask me how you become a baseball executive. And of course, I have no idea how you do that, since I am not a baseball executive. But your route was a little bit unusual these days, as you are a major league player. You know, obviously the hardcore fan would know that, but you were a good relief pitcher with the
Rangers.
Kind of, well, I looked at your record. It was all right. Your ERA was good. You know, did you expect, how did you get to where you are? I mean, the general manager of the Dodgers, that's a pretty good job at your age. How did you do it?
I mean, once I got done playing, I got released in 16 and, you know, started making calls. And obviously Andrew was the GM in Tampa when I was a player and said, hey, I'm looking to get in to the other side. And fortunately enough, you know, Cap was the farm director at the time and rebuilding the pitching department. And it was something that was very interesting to me. And it was a way to get in the door. I didn't really want to coach ultimately, but I found that role to be very much like player facing, doing deep dives and still getting the interaction, like kind of the clubhouse interaction that would scratch the itch of when you were playing. And look, fortunately enough, was able to just do everything I could in each role that I had leading up to this current one and kind of put my head down and work, and been very fortunate to have great people around me and get this opportunity.
Brandon, a last one on the field from me. Maybe Mookie Betts, one of the best right fielders defensively I've ever seen. He's going to be playing second base for you next year. I wonder if I could just ask you about your double play combination then. Why is he playing second base? And Gavin Lux, who was going to be your starting shortstop last year, hurt his knee badly in spring training, didn't play. What's his status? What's the status of your double play combination, essentially?
Yeah, Luxie is progressing very well. He's been here in LA for quite a while now, so he's on track to go out and be ready to be full go come opening day. And look, we were really excited about Gavin coming in last year, giving him, you know, the reign to go out and be our everyday guy. And unfortunately, he had the injury. And, you know, part of the Rojas acquisition was, you know, hey, we know we're going to get a veteran guy who can really defend if things, if there were injuries or different areas. So, you know, Gavin's on pace to be full go and looking really good and feeling good. Still have Miggy behind him, who's going to play a bunch all over the infield. And Mookie, like, anywhere you put Mookie, I think any sport Mookie played, he'd be Hall of Fame caliber. So getting him at second full time, he really enjoys it. He was outstanding during his time there. You know, being able to have Jay Hay in right field, there's not too many times you could not lose much or any in a position where you're moving Mookie off of. And Jason was fantastic in right. So I think the overall construction of the team with Mookie at second has been really solid. And having him there full time, I think, will be easier on his body, which will just allow him to play more and feel better. And, you know, as the as things play out over the years, I think it'll be a benefit, because I do think he's going to be elite defensively there as well.
Brandon, as a way to just wrap this up, look, I don't ever like the, hey, do you feel more pressure? Because then, you know, the cliches become pressure is a privilege, or, you know, like, why would we feel more pressure? I just wonder, as a combination question to close, can you be more championship and bust than you have been in the last 10, 11 years because of what you did this offseason? And what do you think about, I remember covering the Yankees of the late 90s, early 2000. I know what the team with the target on it looks like. I know what Goliath looks like. That's you this year. Everyone's coming after you. Can you be more championship and bust than you are this year? What does it feel like to be the team with the biggest target on its back?
Yeah, I would argue that every year we're championship or bust in our minds, and it feels like if we don't win, it's looked at as a disappointment. We're disappointed. And if we win, great. So it's like, it's very binary in our world. I'm not sure that's factual, but I think how things play out, it becomes binary. And, you know, this is a veteran group of guys that have been here before, that have won championships, who have had pressure on them. I just don't see it as that much different than it has been. And I think it's more of an excitement. And I think Dodger Stadium is going to be incredibly loud and bringing a ton of energy each and every day. And that's what our group is going to be most excited about, and getting to play together and hopefully get into the playoffs and make a deep run to a championship.
It really does feel like Hollywood's team now, with the number of stars you have. It's going to be fascinating. I know I'm going spring training. I'm going to come see you. I'm sure I'll see you play a lot of games during the regular season. But Brandon, mostly we're glad we got to see you today. John and I, we appreciate you joining us on the show.
Thank you, fellas. It was a pleasure.
We, of course, thank Brandon Gomes for joining us on the show. John, hitter error this week.
Yeah, at the risk of being redundant, I'll do this as an error. You know, I'm just not sure Marcus Stroman is the solution for the Yankees. I know we've been over it. I'm still a little bit disbelieving that this is the way that it went. He certainly does help, but if this is the finish, I'll give the error to the Yankees, because look at that depth. It's not great. Luke Weaver is not depth to me. They need to add some starters. They lost six between the Padres trade, Severino and Montas. Stroman and Weaver do not make up for the loss of six pitchers.
And it's very, very, very minor, but the first two picks in the Rule 5 draft were Yankee pitchers as well, minor league pitchers who would have been kind of in that shoot of pitchers they might have considered this year. Instead, they're right, at least now, with Oakland and Kansas City. John, I'm going to do a hit this week. The Giants brought back Dusty Baker as a special assistant. I think both I always try never to speak for you, but I think this is true. I think both you and I think the sport is better when Dusty Baker is part of it. He really feels a little bit like one of our like folklore heroes. He's touched everyone for the last 50 years in the sport. He has so many great stories about people he has associations with off the field. I was behind the batting cage with him during the World Series, and suddenly we were talking about like Secret Service guys he had known through the years and when he was in Washington. And I've never not had a fascinating conversation with Dusty Baker. So I'm glad, you know, he has association with the Giants. The Giants are great at legacy. You know, like if you're ever around them, you know how they always brought back the Gaylord Perrys, the Juan Marichals, the Willie McCoveys. Obviously, Willie Mays is still tied to them. So I like it that Dusty Baker's back in baseball in some way with the Giants.
Absolutely. We love Dusty Baker. Should be in the Hall of Fame someday for his incredible baseball life. I'm sure he'll be noted as a manager, but he was a great, great hitter as well. You're right. He knows everybody. If you're going to know Secret Service people, he's going to be the guy because he knows presidents. So if you know presidents, you're going to know Secret Service people. Amazing guy. Very great hire. Good pick, Joel.
Yes, and we still have to keep working. We've been working to try to get him on the show. We'll try in 2024 again since he still has an association with us. So hopefully with the show, which is a podcast from the New York Post. We've mentioned this. I think this is the last time before the voting. Now, maybe there's still a little time that the show's a finalist in the 2024 Sports Podcast Awards for Best Baseball Podcast. We can always use your votes. Go to sportspodcastgroup.com, click vote now, and vote for the show under Best Baseball Podcast. Voting ends January 28th, so I guess we'll bother you again with this for at least one more week. So thanks for your support there. As always, you can find us on Apple, Spotify, also on the New York Post sports YouTube page if you want to see the pretty faces, me and John. We always appreciate all the work our producers, Jake Brown and Andrew Hartz, do. And John, we're ticking down just a few more weeks till spring training. I hope everyone sticks with us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Hayden.